Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. James Coe here with you, joined alongside by the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin. What's cracking?
Bashing the haters and losers on Twitter right now, of which there are many. No, I'm excited for it to be Thursday here.
Getting you ready here for week three. We got Boy Young Boy. We got Matt Harmon on Tinder.
I'm trying to
as
share.
As per usual.
Actually, I'm trying to share your Facebook broadcast so that we can all, you know, promote ourselves and pat each other on the back.
Absolutely.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Lovely. And we have the magical beard of fantasy copiously writing down notes right now.
Yep. What's up?
Matt,
good morning.
What's up, man?
Hello, friends.
Hello. Are you ready?
I'm ready to rock.
All right, let's
Week three preview. Let's do it.
We're going to get you to every damn game. We're going to give you deep sleepers for here week three, or if you prefer, maybe an early week four pickup for those of you who are in the know and ahead of the game. We're going to give you, of course, all the latest injury news, and we start right now with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
All right, let's start in Minnesota. Sam Bradford, day-to-day, limited in practice. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reporting, quote, Bradford is believed to have a bone bruise, that according to a source. They'll see how his knee responds to an injection and go from there.
Fun.
Ow. That doesn't sound great, but I guess if – look, no one's really playing Sam Bradford. That's
James,
fine.
I was told he's fine. I was told he could play this week. I was told he could play 6 weeks from now. I was told either way.
So where's –
he's fine.
So where's the lie?
He's fine. He's fine. Good. It's fine.
Good.
It's fine, right? It's
good,
fine.
Perfect.
This is fine.
No, but what do you do with Stephon Diggs? What do you do with Adam Thielen? A lot of people obviously freaking out because they saw what the effects of Case Keenum are on the statistical values of Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen.
I'm benching him if Bradford's out. Tampa Bay's got a good defense.
Yeah.
They're at home. There's just minimal upside. Like, the Keenum has been atrocious since 2013 statistically among, like, all passers to have at least 20 starts. I think I said this on the last podcast. He ranks, like, 34th, 33rd in, like, completion percentage, yards per game, turnovers. It's not great. I don't want to go down with that ship. I don't want to ruin my Sunday by watching
right.
Case Keenum and being like, please connect with them, please connect with them, please.
I'm covering
my eyes for those of you listening to this right now.
I'm a little torn because you don't know how prepared Keenum was for the game last week. Like, it might have been like woke up Sunday morning and they were like, you're in. And he was like, what?
Yeah.
And he probably had no reps with the starters. The Steelers have a decent defense. The Bucks also have a decent defense. So I'm a little torn. You would think they prepared him with the starters this week.
You would think so. You're saying first team reps. I mean, it's true because did he get first team reps last week?
You would assume if Bradford
was hurt. Although the injury did catch a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, like it was like, oh, he'll test it out in warm-ups before the game.
Right.
And then he just didn't go like an hour before game started. And
right.
It's a much softer landing spot being at home than going into Pittsburgh, too, for a player like Case Keenum. So there's that.
Is it a situation, though, where you might be okay – if we're trying to project game script, could you be okay playing Diggs and Thielen in a high-scoring game? Maybe Tampa Bay runs out to a big lead. Minnesota's like, hey, man, we got to just air this baby out. And they get after it. I don't know. Is that a potential game script there for Tampa Bay?
I think that's possible, but I also think it's quite possible this is a real low-scoring game with two pretty good defenses.
Yeah. They got great defenses. They're on the road. The Vikings will keep them close, and it's just going to be low volume coming from Case Keenum, which just makes me want to vomit.
That I would agree with. All right, let's move on. Jordan Howard, limited in practice Wednesday with a shoulder injury. He was spotted in a sling, remember, post-game Sunday. Also, Kyle Long remained limited in practice as well. Okay, so what are you doing with Jordan Howard? Again, dealing with that shoulder injury franchise.
I think you got to bench him for now until
wow.
we see.
Agreed.
He left the stadium in a sling, like you said. Like, we don't – limited practice. He was limited all week last week, and then he didn't get a carry in the second half. And I think it's going to be a Tariq Cohen game. The Steelers have a good defense. And basically, if you're starting Howard, you're banking on the Bears getting down there to the goal line, the Mike Glennon-led Bears offense getting down there to the goal line and hoping and praying that Jordan Howard is there to punch one in. And I don't know if you can really risk that.
You're really kind of screwed if you drafted Jordan Howard in the first or second round. Yeah. That's just kind of the – that's what we know now. But based on what we know from the 2017 season, like, you're screwed if this is what you did. because basically he's essentially what Mike Gillisley is, but – one of them plays on the Patriots, and the other one plays on the Bears.
And like, he's injured.
And he's injured. You're just kind of hoping that he scores a touchdown, basically. Like, that's what
you're – cool, he'll give you, like, 8 points. That's, like, his ceiling now. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, if he somehow gets in the end zone twice, but he plays on the Bears, man. Like, it's a really rough spot. Like, everything that could be working against a running back is currently working against this running back.
He lost, like, all of his passing game work last week, which is the nail in the coffin for me. That's why you got to sit him. He had one target last week.
Yeah. Well, he didn't play in the second half.
He didn't play in the half, but if they're down, they're going to use Cohen.
Exactly.
That suits his skill set more.
I think
they're going to be down. They're playing the Steelers. Let's be real.
I'm worried about the injury, too, until we see him, like, on the field for a whole game.
That's a big one. I think they could be hiding this, and he's going to have a very limited workload just so teams have to prepare for him, and
correct.
It's going to be a fantasy nightmare.
Yeah.
Jordy Nelson back at practice Wednesday.
Woo!
Randall Cobb not at practice
Boo.
Wednesday. He's got a shoulder injury as well. Brian Bulaga back at practice. Bakhtiari not at practice.
Okay.
Good, bad. Jordy Nelson there.
Jordy
put me on an emotional roller coaster here with all these updates for my team.
All right, so Jordy Nelson back at practice. What do we make of that, Alex Gilhar?
It's great news. I mean, he was on the stationary bike for most of that game after he tweaked his quad. I think he's been mostly limited in practice throughout. He might have sat out one of them, but he was back practicing at full. He said his expectation is to play, and if somebody's practicing in full this late in the week,
I agree.
Unless there's a surprise setback, he's going to be in there. So you can lock him and Davante Adams into your lineups. I think Cobb with that shoulder injury is a little more concerning. As great as he's been, he leads the Packers in targets and catches so far this year. I'd probably leave him on the bench just because they may limit his snaps with that shoulder injury, especially or chest, whatever it is now, especially with him being out this late in the week.
Yeah, it's a bit, I don't know. I felt bad for Randall Cobb because, you know, obviously he had an injury-riddled campaign in 2016. He was starting to cook.
He was.
You know what
I mean? He was really starting to cook this year.
I know. And then he got that shoulder injury now, and I don't know. It doesn't look like he's – if he's going to play, it's going to be in a limited capacity in week three. All right, Jimmy Graham did not practice Wednesday. We talked about him, you know, possibly, you know, didn't look great. Obviously, what has he got, 9 yards in two games? Or is it 8 yards? I don't know what it is.
It's 8 or 9 yards on like –
It's not good.
Nine
it's not double digits.
It's less than 10, which is not ideal.
And now we find that he's been dealing with an ankle injury as well. Did not practice on Wednesday. I will throw this out there. I've seen this on Twitter as well. People want to drop Jimmy Graham.
It's not the craziest thing in the world right now. You want, like, with tight ends these days, basically all we're chasing is touchdown upside. And
yes.
The Seahawks offense is not threatening the end zone a lot. And even when they are, like, Graham – I have to look at his red zone targets.
Do they have one touchdown on the season?
They have a touchdown on the season, and it's from Paul Richardson.
Yeah.
Good God.
Give me 2 seconds here to – oh, great. Of course, now the spreadsheet's not working. Good stuff. This is wonderful radio.
I don't think you drop him
because the Seahawks offense should get right, but if you're hurting for tight end production, he has one target in the red zone.
I think part of the reason why people are wanting to drop him is the mentality of they don't want to roster two tight ends.
Yeah, which is totally understandable. I don't like to roster two tight ends either, but I think it's too reactionary to drop him.
Okay.
Like Gilhar said, you're basically just chasing touchdowns with Jimmy Graham, and while he doesn't have that right now, he has the potential to be one of those tight ends that you're doing more than just chasing a touchdown with. This stat comes in from Adam Levitan. I think it really illustrates the Seahawks offense well. Since 2014, points per game for Russell Wilson – September 16.3, October 18.9, November 21.7, December 24.2. So this is like business as usual for the Seahawks. As annoying and as frustrating as it is, we've seen them slow start before and then get right. So we're just kind of crossing our fingers and hoping that happens soon.
All right. So there you go. Jordan Reed was out of practice Wednesday. He had a chest injury in addition to having a broken toe.
Big surprise.
chest injury.
Jordan Reed's injured.
Jordan Reed out of practice Wednesday. I got to think he's not playable on Sunday, even if he's active. We'll find out, of course, whether or not he will play. But even if he is active, I don't know. Matt Harmon, I'm telling people don't play the guy. I just don't see any upside there.
Yeah, I don't know. All the tight ends that are normally hurt are hurt.
Yeah,
it seems to be that
it's
way.
Bad shape.
Yeah, I understand that with Reed like not wanting to play him, but at the same time, this is probably going to be a pretty high scoring game on Sunday night against the Raiders, who
exactly
in the past have given up a ton of production to tight ends.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
I think I'm still playing Reed. I just don't have, like, a lot of people ask me these questions all the time, and
yeah.
Especially now that I've been going back and forth, like, more in detail on people with, like, Snapchat and stuff. Like,
okay.
A lot of times I tell people, like, if you want to do that, like, go for it. I don't have the stones to do it. Like, that's the way I am. I just, like, these guys that are big-time producers, even if it's a rough spot, I don't have the stones to do it. Maybe I'm just a coward, but that's me.
In Reed's favor, like, the Washington offense has not reached its heights that we know it can, but he's still second on the team in targets with 14, leads the team in receptions with 11, and is second on the team in receiving yards with 84.
Okay.
So if that offense, like you said, this could be a high-scoring game. If that offense gets back to the levels where it's operating very efficiently and, you know, Kirk's pushing 300 yards passing a game, you can easily see a situation where Reed is a reliable contributor
and
again.
If they do get down there near the goal line, inside the 10-yard line, you know, Rob Kelly's injured now. Maybe they don't try to pound it in with the running backs. Maybe they throw it to a guy like Jordan Reed.
Yeah, Rob Kelly dealing with a bruised rib or something along those lines. And that's actually pretty good news, actually, really for him, because they were afraid that it might be a cracked rib and that would keep him out a lot of games. But it looks like Rob Kelly
came back into the game after he left. Like, he went in the locker room last week, and then he came back on the field, which I think was
a good
sign.
But then didn't he leave again and took the pads off?
I don't know.
I think I saw him in the
probably.
Fourth quarter. With pads off.
Maybe, yeah.
Anyways, Terrence West did not practice Wednesday. He's got a thigh injury as well.
Regarding Terrence West, it's worth remembering that Ravens-Jags game is in London, so it's a 9:30 Eastern start.
You know what? That's why I put
Pacific.
It here.
So if you have Terrence West, it's probably worth it to just bench him out of safety. Like, he's injured. He's already ceding work to Buck Allen. And that game starts so early, the last thing you want to do is be out a little too late on Saturday night, wake up and be like, oh, great, Terrence West is out. So I think if you have players in this game that are injured, I mean, he's the main one. You just sit him.
Yeah. Marshall Yanda also out for the season now, too. I mean, you know, where Terrence West is going to make hay is going to be on the ground, right, between the tackles. And with no Yanda, the Baltimore offense looking a little suspect anyways. As you mentioned, it's going to be an early game dealing with an injury in London.
We're shipping over probably a 12-6 game to London for the first one.
Nice.
Have fun.
Sorry.
Go pick up Alex Collins, though. He's worth grabbing.
Okay.
Yeah, I've picked him up in a couple
Deep
spots.
Deep sleeper. It's a beautiful segue into early week 4 pickup / deep sleepers for week 3. So that's not bad, actually, Alex Collin as an early stash.
Yeah, he was in the deep dive this week for me, and he got 7 carries for over 40 yards in his first game with the Ravens against the Browns. As you mentioned, Terrence West banged up. It's just worth it at this point of the season to start looking at some of these backfields that don't have a ton of clarity. Like, they have a guy they've added. Obviously, they like him. They elevated him from the practice squad. And it's just about opportunity, man. If something happens to Buck Allen, he gets hurt, whatever, then Collins would probably step right into a starting role with a ton of volume. So it's worth going out and grabbing him.
All right, WizKid, you got a deep sleeper for me?
Yeah, if you're in a deeper league and you're desperate for wide receiver help, you could go to the Packers and dial up Geronimo Allison.
Oh!
He actually played.
Homer.
He played the second most snaps in that game on Sunday, and Jordy Nelson, while he should play, he could easily re-aggravate that quad. But with Cobb out, if they do go to 3 wides, Allison's kind of the next man up there to step up with them. And you would expect the Packers to hang a bunch of points on the Bengals this week. I think they're expected to win by 10 points per some people that look at those numbers. And are there, you know what I mean? I'm going to dance around that a little bit.
Okay,
but, Geronimo Allison, give him a look.
All right. All right.
High numbers.
Franchise?
Yo, I'm going with the wide receiver New England, Philip Dorsett, because why not?
What?
Isn't he injured right now?
Every wide receiver on the Patriots
injured.
Is on the injury report.
That's
okay?
Also true.
Rex Burkhead, Rob Gronkowski, Danny Amendola, Philip Dorsett, Chris Hogan, and Matt Slater are all on the Patriots injury report this week. This is what the Patriots do because they want to mask their plan.
Everybody actually is injured this year, too. It's not
this time for real, though.
Look, last week, Dorsett had three catches for, I think, 68 yards. Yes, it was against the Saints, but he's out there in a lot of leagues. You know, they just picked him up before the season started. They might get him a little more integrated to this offense as the season goes on, considering all these injuries.
Okay.
You know, his production will be volatile, but deep sleeper. We're talking deep sleeper.
Yes.
He's a guy who's out there, you know?
Can I give you a ridiculously deep sleeper? I mean, this is literally like you got to be 16 teams in a PPR league.
Danger zone.
Danger zone. Let's go. Tyler Irvin in Houston.
Ooh. Gross.
I like what you're doing here, Co.
Not
for,
want.
I know. Listen, for whatever reason, he's been getting more snaps, you know, as the weeks have gone on here. And this is a game that could be a blowout. I could see some garbage time points being accrued by Tyler Irvin, their pass-catching back,
right,
late in the ball game. And again, this is for PPR only.
I believe
total yardage, I don't think it's going to be great.
Look, he got a lot of snaps last week.
He did.
Against the Bengals. 79% of them were out of the slot.
Boom.
So I think they're using him as a slot guy because they all their pass catchers, all their tight ends, all their wideouts are injured.
Only thing that sucks for that pick, James, is Bruce Ellington, Harmon's favorite, is back to practicing in full.
And yeah, bro.
I think they used Irvin there a lot because they were without like every wide
receiver.
They were
receiver without the NFL's best slot receiver. Even
right, but they might, you know, they might be using him there more.
Yeah.
They were without the NFL's best.
But wait,
slot
you have
receiver.
To be torn now because Higgins is in the NFL and is actually playing. So how do you decide between Higgins and Ellington? Your boy, your tits.
Whichever one goes off on Sunday.
That's the one I'm claiming.
Nice.
That's the one I'm claiming.
Yeah, not to dive into the Higgins thing, but I'm just from like all the tweets I've been getting this week, it's either going to be a really fun Sunday or a really bad Sunday for
beautiful.
Me. So just let's all just prepare mentally.
I love
to start Higgins, bro.
I absolutely love it. All right, EDG, let's go. Every damn game. Baltimore taking on Jacksonville in London.
Get excited, London.
Hey, they love their Jaguars, okay?
They do.
They just love the, you know, God bless them. They just love their football.
I think I saw NFL Network Steve Smith tweet last night.
Okay.
I was on my way home, and he was like, I just got on a plane to London. I forgot how he was like, Jaguars fans travel well. He was
they
like,
do.
This plane is loaded with Jaguars fans.
Nice.
Love it.
And then he hashtagged the tweet, Steve Smith.
I will say,
I was like, who hashtagged the tweet?
He hashtagged it with his name?
Yeah.
I'm going to start doing that. Hashtag Matt Harmon.
I want to say real quick before we dive into this, shout out to the UK fans, though. They do love their football. When I was over there for my my other
football
trip in the spring to watch a bunch of soccer, everywhere I went, like I'd meet up with some fans, and like they love it. We'd have some beers, we'd talk football, and they're diehards over there.
They
awesome.
Tweet a lot at us too.
They do.
It's always
they love
cool.
It.
So
yeah.
credit
love the
to
international.
I do as much as I'm razzing this game being Ravens Jags. I do love the passion that the UK fans have for it.
Don't
so Harmon,
about it.
Let's dive into it.
Wait, Mike Wallace says, "quote He needs the rock more."
All right.
That's the news piece that comes in with this game. But Matt Harmon.
What does he have, like four targets in two games?
He's Mike Wallace.
He and Perriman have three catches for 20 yards on 12 targets.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Well, look, the Ravens' passing offense right now is not very voluminous with the
voluminous.
They really have commit.
I like it.
A lot of times teams are, you know, they say one thing and then they can't quite do it. But the Ravens did seem like, hey, we want to run the ball more. We want to be a more conservative ground-based attack. And they have been so far. I mean, Buck Allen is eating up touches back there. I mean, Terrence West is still getting work, too, when he's been healthy.
Indeed.
So I just don't think that, like, outside of Ben Watson and Jeremy Maclin, there really isn't much to eat in the Ravens passing game. Now, the Jaguars defense has two great like boundary corners in A.J. Bouye and Jalen Ramsey, that does leave room in the middle of the field to attack, and I think Ben Watson and Jeremy Maclin running a lot of his routes from the slot are pretty good plays in this game.
I like it.
Especially Watson, who caught all eight of his targets last week, played a ton. And you know a lot of look what the Titans did with their tight ends. Even Jonnu Smith got a big long touchdown run against the Jags last week.
Jonnu Smith, yes.
I think that is where you want to attack a defense that has great cornerbacks and a strong pass rush in the Jaguars. So I think those two guys are great plays. And on the Jags side, I mean, it's a ugly spot for pretty much everybody. Ravens defense has been lights out through 2 weeks. You're playing Fournette based on volume, and you're probably ignoring all the pass catchers.
I think the Jags defense is a decent play, though, especially because Marshall Yanda just went out. They can still pressure. And that pass attack, the Ravens actually have a 60-40 run to pass split right now, so that pass attack isn't dynamic. If this game stays close, they could pick up a couple sacks and maybe a turnover. Who knows? It's in London. Weird things could happen.
That's also true. Denver taking on the Bills. We'll stay with you, Wizkid.
Well, this is an interesting game because I think this is the this is like the truth-telling game for Trevor Siemian here. He's had two good games. He scored on a lot of like passing touchdowns inside the 10. He's got his great receivers. But Buffalo is one of two teams that hasn't allowed a passing touchdown yet this year. So I still think Trevor Siemian's in a decent spot because the Bills played the Jets in week one, and then they had Cam Newton miss a wide-open touchdown last week. So that's a bit of a misleading stat. I think you got to ride the hot hand with Trevor Siemian right now until the magic runs out. It could very well be this week on the road. This kind of feels like a trap game for him. But he's been playing well. He's making good decisions. He's got great receivers. You're starting Thomas and Sanders, speaking of, because they have 26.7 and 23.3% of his targets right now. That's what we just expect from them. Those two are going to eat up all the targets. And then CJ Anderson right now, workhorse baby, leads all NFL running backs in touches. Can't turn away from him right now, even in a bad matchup.
I agree.
And their defense obviously is in a good spot. They held to, they slowed down two good offenses. They're going on the road, but the Bills offense is not great right now. And I love the Broncos defense. On the flip side for the Bills, really the only people we're trusting in this offense, at least to me, are LeSean McCoy volume and Charles Clay is maybe a streamer again. If the Bills are going to move the ball at all against this Denver defense, I think it's going to be shady on the ground. He was disappointing last week, 12 rushes, 9 yards. But
that was bad.
Carolina.
You'll think they'll try and flip that back.
Well, now it's Denver, though.
And and Denver's run defense is no joke right now. Yep. But you would think the Bills will try to get back to what they do best, run the ball. And then Charles Clay, I mean, Jason Witten was a key chain mover for the Cowboys last week, catching 10 of 13 targets for 97 yards and a score.
Crazy.
Charles Clay is not a Hall of Famer like Jason Witten, but the opportunity is there at least.
I like it. Pittsburgh taking on Chicago in the Windy City. We go to the man with the voluminous beard.
Wow. Voluminous is the word of the day.
Matt Franchise.
You're welcome.
This is an inflection point game, I think,
Very good.
It's
I'm getting on
good.
Tinder. It's
a voluminous inflection point.
I like it.
For Marcus Wheaton revenge game, guys.
Yeah,
come
buddy.
On.
He was
a full participant in practice Wednesday. We know the Bears need playmakers in that offense, especially in the pass catching.
Talk about
core.
Deep sleep.
So
let's go.
Yeah, let's keep an eye on Marcus Wheaton. He might get some volume here against his old team. Steelers D is obviously a great play there. Top 10 fantasy defense through two games. You can't trust Jordan Howard. We already talked about that. I expect a heavy dose of Tariq Cohen. Even though Steelers rushing defense is ranked 8th in the league right now. Glennon, can we trust Glennon to move the ball? Not really. You're starting most of your Steelers. The Bears pass defense is ranked 24th in the league. So you're starting AB, you're starting Martavis. I like Bell to get really back on track here. We saw him have high volume last week, not a ton of production, but, 31 touches. You can't leave that on your bench, obviously. So
there you go.
Good game for the Steelers, not a great game for your Bears.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the road, taking on the Minnesota Vikings. Matt Harmon, what do you got?
Yeah, so we kind of talked about this game already up top with the Sam Bradford injury. And the way it could kind of go multiple different ways. I'll tell you, a player I really like in this game is DeSean Jackson, with Mike Evans probably tied up with Xavier Rhodes, who traveled with Antonio Brown on 71.4% of his pass plays last week and held him to just 28 yards on 8 targets. So he's obviously – he's one of the best corners in the game. He's been lights out the last 2 years.
Him traveling is weird, though.
Yeah, because I'm actually writing about this for the Next Gen Stats column, which should be up by the time this podcast is posted. He didn't travel around with Michael Thomas at all. He mostly just stuck to the right corner position.
And last year as well.
He didn't
move almost at all.
Only occasionally. So it's kind of a guessing game in terms of when are the Vikings going to deem a receiver worthy to have him track around the field. So you're kind of rolling the dice. But just assume for a minute that is what happens with Mike Evans here.
Okay.
I think that leaves DeSean Jackson in a really great spot against cornerbacks Trey Waynes and Terrence Newman, who just got – especially Waynes got roasted by Martavis Bryant, another deep threat last week.
Interesting.
The air yards were there for DeSean Jackson. He averaged over 19 air yards per target. So they're taking deep shots to him, and if he hauls one of those down, down, you know, we know the deal with Jackson.
Yeah.
Super volatile.
Right.
Who knows? But if he hauls one of those down, he's going to probably make your fantasy week, and I think this is one of those times when you want to try and trot him out there. I think everybody else in the Bucks is, you know, kind of – I'm not too excited about Jameis Winston in this game.
Nope.
And you know the deal with Jaquizz Rodgers. He's getting
Quiz.
The volume.
Yeah.
Please.
That's about it.
Miami taking on the New York Jets. Alex Gilhar, what do you got?
We've been talking about this all week, that this is a great spot for Jay Cutler to come out and put up huge numbers. So, obviously, he's going to fall flat on his face.
Oh, yeah. Huge interception numbers.
Ajayi scoring 3 touchdowns and Cuddy's scoring 0.
Oh, I'm not
That's
playing
happened.
Cuddy. No. Yeah, no way.
Yeah, I'm kind of – the longer that the week has gone on,
yeah,
the
exactly.
more I'm like, I don't
nah,
want to
Nah, I'm
Cutler.
Not playing Cuddy.
He's a decent streamer if you're in a yeah. in a dire spot, if
it's
you've
a good
had
matchup.
Rough
the,
quarterback
the
play.
The awesome thing about Cuddy in this spot is literally the range of possibilities is endless.
Oh, it,
you know what I mean?
I could see him finishing as the QB1, and I could see him having 100 yards and 2 picks.
I could absolutely see this guy slinging it for 350 and 5 touchdowns. Absolutely. Just putting a hurting on the Jets. But I could also see him just, you know, cigarette in the mouth on the sideline.
In defense of Cuddy in the good matchup, the Jets have allowed an 8.9 touchdown rate to opposing quarterbacks. It's the highest in the league. We all know Jay Ajayi is going to crush you. Definitely starting him this week.
Right.
I think this is a good spot for Devontae Parker, though. If Cutler does do something deep, it's going to be to Parker. He
for
also
sure.
has 47.7% of the team air yards, was ranked 5th among wide receivers in week 2. So he's getting plays downfield. We saw him make a couple last week, and he could be in for a big spot. If you're starting Jarvis Landry, you know he's basically a running back catching 3-yard passes. Got 13 of them, averaged 3.2 air yards per target.
It's just silly.
It's an extended handoff.
No, but I'm saying in PPR, it's just silly.
Why PPR is dumb.
This is dumb. It's like you look at the stat line, you're like, oh my God, this guy absolutely crushed.
Yeah.
And you see 13 catches for 70 yards.
Yeah.
On the Jets side, like. If you want, if you're interested in a YOLO play, you can stream Josh McCown. I would not. I'm not a fan of this offense right now. I'm not chasing Jermaine Kearse's touchdown production either. He scored twice on 5 targets last week.
For whatever reason, Ndamukong Suh also looks rejuvenated.
Yes.
That means bad things.
Yeah.
And I was going to say 9 different players received at least one of McCown's 25 targets in week 2. So there's not a lot of volume to begin with. And McCown, being the veteran, is spreading it around.
Jermaine Kearse, bro?
5 targets.
Okay.
James.
All right,
five targets from the Jets. Hard pass. Although it's worth keeping an eye on Austin Seferian Jenkins, who Harmon wrote up in the deep dive. Probably not to play this week. I just saw another report that he's shocker out of shape little bit coming off his suspension. Mm. But he's somebody to maybe scoop up and stash if you have the space and you're desperate for tight end help.
Atlanta. Taking on Detroit in the Motor City. French, what you got?
Yeah, this is expected to be a high-scoring game. We got two quarterbacks who are playing out of their minds right now, Matt Ryan and Matt Stafford.
Right.
Matt Ryan has yet to throw a pick this season. I think his touchdown to interception ratio since week 14 of last year is 22-0.
Okay, pretty good.
He's doing well.
Pretty good.
Matt Stafford is tied for the lead with Trevor Siemian with 6 touchdown passes this year, so you're firing him up against the Falcons. The Lions also have the number one red zone offense.
By
the
way,
NFL.
Stafford's done well in the first 2 weeks given the matchups.
For sure.
He's had 2 really, really tough matchups, and he's really come through.
Yeah. I like Stafford's he looks awesome this year.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting all your Falcons. You're starting Devonta Freeman. You're starting Julio Jones. You're probably flexing Tevin Coleman just because it could be a high-scoring game.
Also, for whatever reason, he scores more on the road than at home. I don't know if that's because of the matchups or because they're typically leading more at home, but Devonta Freeman gets all the touchdowns at home, and Coleman gets into the mix a little more on the road.
So random.
It's a weird thing, but
you're okay. also – I'd roll Amir Abdullah out in the flex, hope for like 15 carries for maybe 90 yards.
Yeah.
A couple catches. Maybe you take a chance on Theo Riddick.
I think this is a Theo Riddick
game. It's a good spot for Theo.
I also wrote up Austin Hooper as like a deep streamer at tight end.
Like it.
Lions are susceptible to tight end fantasy points, as we saw Evan Engram score against them last week. You're starting Eric Ebron. And the Falcons, something to watch. They're going to be without star linebacker Vic Beasley.
Yeah, man.
So he accounted for 42.7% of Atlanta's sacks since 2016. So
I also like
Golden Tate.
I think that's part of the reason why this game is going to be so high scoring is there's just both quarterbacks going to be able to sit back there and just chuck the rock all over the place.
Yeah, and just like between Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay, it's like that's so unpredictable. Marvin Jones has – I think 3 catches and 2 touchdowns on the year.
Right. Exactly.
Galladay kind of disappeared last week. That's a tough one. That's kind of why I like Ebron and Tate.
Yeah. He did see two deep targets, though, which that's what you want, right?
He and Jones are definitely just high ceiling,
low
floor.
For sure.
I think they're each worth a shot in this game, though. I mean, Jones is also – he drew Patrick Peterson a lot in week one and had to face that Giants secondary. So his two touchdowns on three catches isn't anything necessarily to turn our noses up at.
Yeah.
In a game, if he draws a better matchup, he could get pummeled with some targets.
There you go. I like it. New Orleans taking on Carolina, divisional matchup. Matt Harmon, what do you got?
Yeah, so this game, I don't really know how I feel about it overall in terms of, like,
what are your feelings?
What are my feelings on this game? Well, look, I think there's a chance that this could be a high-scoring game, but at the same time, you know, it's New Orleans on the road. We know that whole deal. And Carolina's defense has been, like, the best in the NFL.
Phenomenal.
I mean, they've been incredible. They've been pressuring. I mean, they demolished the Bills offense last week, which, of course, a little bit different with it being the Saints.
Right.
But nevertheless, like, I don't think this game turns into too much of a high-scoring contest. But for your Panthers, obviously, this is a get-right spot for a lot of these guys that have kind of started slow. Like, I think Cam Newton is definitely worth a shot. I don't know. Again, I don't know if he has, like, top 10 upside or whatever, but I definitely think, you know, He can get there because it's the Saints defense.
Right.
The guy I'm watching in this game in terms of the passing game is Kelvin Benjamin, who obviously I think you're playing against the Saints, but also Devin Funchess, who I wrote another player that I wrote up in deep dive. And it's like, geez, I'm really going to talk about Devin Funchess right now. But here we are. He's 44% of his targets have come from the slot. That's up from 24% in 2016 and 8% in 2015. So they are using him in a different way. They're getting both of these guys on more in-breaking, higher percentage routes than just low percentage across the sideline. So, and with Greg Olsen leaving a big target vacuum, I think Devin Funch is definitely worth a sleeper flex play in this spot. And also I think Christian McCaffrey gets going. The Panthers might miss Ryan Khalil again this week, which is a big reason I think that their run blocking hasn't been all that great. But even if he's not out there, I mean, the Saints always bleed passing production to running back. So you think this is a spot where McCaffrey gets going. And on the Saints side, I mean, I don't think you're messing around with the backfield.
Please don't.
Don't do that. I think you're playing Michael Thomas just because he's the top target in this offense. And I think Kobe Fleener worth a shot again, too, because – I mean, at this point, he has two touchdowns in 2 weeks, and he also scored a touchdown last time in 2016 when Willie Snead didn't play.
Three for three.
Fleen dog.
Games without Snead.
The Fleen dog.
I will say, if you're desperate, though, Mark Ingram is at least getting – could be a floor play. He's getting – I think he leads there. He's right behind Alvin Kamara in targets and leads the team in rushing yards and carries.
I also want to say –
it's not great,
it's rough,
but, like, but running back is bad right now.
You're right.
I mean,
totally
Chris Thompson is the RB6 in standard league, so beggars can't be choosers.
Is he the RB6 on six touches? Or
13 touches he has this year, and he's the RB6.
Yes. I love it.
I also want to say, if Cam doesn't get right in this game, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's the Saints.
That's true.
Like, and he's on the injury report with an ankle he suffered last week, and he's not 100% with his shoulder. Like, little concerned. And Greg Olsen is out.
The Saints thus far have allowed a passer rating of over 141 to opposing quarterbacks.
So if he can't get right,
it's bad.
It's a concern for Cam.
Not good.
For sure. If he does get right, maybe sell high on that.
Okay.
For sure.
It's only week three, but in a game that could determine the number one overall pick in the upcoming NFL draft, it is Cleveland taking on Indianapolis.
Oh, I jumped ahead. I flipped over, and I was like, Houston at Pats? Like, what are you talking about? No, Cleveland at Indianapolis.
Nope. It's Cleveland taking out Indianapolis. It's the Browns. It's the Colts. Alex Gilhar, what do you got?
I think there are actually a couple interesting fantasy starts in this one. DeShone Kizer is certainly on the streaming radar. The Colts have given up a couple
of
great
As is Jacoby Brissett, possibly.
Wow. I don't know
about
that. Okay, so Kizer, though, the Colts have been very susceptible to deep passes, and DeShone Kizer is one of the highest volume deep passers in the league thus far.
Yeah.
I know JJ had a stat about him throwing it. I think he leads the league, JJ Zacharyson, in passes of 15-plus air yards. But he's also thrown 16 passes of 20-plus air yards.
Wow.
And the Colts to date have allowed 9 completions on 13 attempts of 20-plus air yards for 278 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 pick. Plus, Kizer also gives you the rushing upside. He's got 10 attempts, 40-some yards, and a TD thus far.
Okay.
Isaiah Crowell, I think this is a good chance for him to get right. He's seen a ton of volume, but has gone up against two of the best run defenses in the league thus far in Pittsburgh and Baltimore.
Okay.
Yeah.
Duke Johnson is interesting right now because after week one not playing a single snap in the backfield, he played 72% of his snaps in the backfield in week two. Still doesn't have the volume you want yet in a flex play. 4 rushes, 6 targets last week, but he's trending in the right direction.
Okay, just keep an eye on that.
Yeah, Rashard Higgins, I think he's a good volume play.
Hollywood Higgins.
Oh, God.
Let's go out and sync with the ship here. As Harmon put his hands up in prayer at the moment.
But you got to think he's in a good spot.
He's in
here.
A very good spot.
He's
he got
playing the slot.
With targets, playing in the slot. The tight ends are interesting, but we can't really start them yet because they're still splitting the snaps like right down the middle. DeValve played 45% and Njoku played 46%. So like you want for a tight end at least somebody that's going to be out there more often. So let's wait and see how that shakes out.
Okay.
And Colt side. I am breaking with my trend this week of not starting any Colts until Andrew Luck comes back because Jack Doyle is in a great spot to eat this week.
Let's go, Jack Doyle.
Brissett pummeled him with targets last week. Doyle caught all 8 for 79 yards.
Nice.
The Browns to date have allowed
this
the
guy is so good at catching the football. His catch rate is unbelievable.
And the Browns have allowed the most catches, the third most yards, and the most touchdowns to tight ends through 2 weeks.
I love
so,
it.
Fire up Rainbow Six, Jack Doyle.
If I'm not mistaken, he either led the league or was second in the league in catch rate among tight ends last year.
I think he was first.
Good, man.
Yeah.
Good. Houston taking on the Patriots. Gronk was limited in practice Wednesday. Franchise, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, if Gronk is starting, you're starting him, obviously.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me jump in first. The Pats said that Gronk was not practicing, that he was out of practice, but multiple reporters saw him working on like the blocking sled, which is, by the way, that's the definition of limited in practice.
Yeah,
just FYI. But so again,
I mean, after he suffered that injury last week, we saw him on the stationary bike. He had already had 100 yards and a touchdown. I think they were just being cautious in the blowout.
Okay.
And then Monday, I was actually listening to the radio broadcast of the Monday night game, and they did, I guess he did an interview with a local New England station and said, you know, it's not a serious injury. I'll be good to go next week.
Beautiful.
You know, it's good that he's getting limited practice, and you're starting Gronk. The Patriots defense is obviously a solid play against Houston's offense. You're starting DeAndre Hopkins because, like, who else is there to catch passes? He's just been peppered with targets. You said Watson's a streaming option, maybe. I'm not on board with that. I think you're starting Mike Gillisley. You're starting James White. Gillisley leads the Patriots with 33 rush attempts. 13 of them have come in the red zone through two games. And James White has 11 receptions for 115 yards through two games.
I didn't check. Is Burkhead?
He's on the injury report.
He did not practice on Wednesday, I think, is the last I saw.
I don't think you can start Burkhead.
Nope.
This doesn't profile as a Burkhead game either. Like, last week did and more of a shootout, but this one, they're going to probably get a lead and then Gillisley.
Exactly.
I think, like, 7 of his 18 carries last week came in the fourth quarter, so.
Boom. Nice. And maybe you throw Lamar Miller in the flex and hope he gets some volume early. If Donta Foreman is still available on your waiver wire, I would just pick him up right
go
now.
Get him.
Like, yeah. He's another deep sleeper that could just be a beast later in the
That's
season.
Right. Absolutely right.
So, yeah, I mean, Patriots are going to win, and all of your Texans are a huge question mark, pretty much. So,
Giants taking on Philadelphia, divisional matchup, NFC East. Odell Beckham limited in practice on Wednesday, but we did see him play, remember. So, Matt Harmon, what do we got?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to play any Giants.
None?
I mean, as I said,
I'm starting Beckham.
Yeah, as I said up top, I don't have the stones to bench a player like Odell Beckham.
Okay.
I said that before the game last week, and I really, you know, people were like, well, you know, start your studs is stupid. And I agree, start your studs is stupid, but Beckham, a little bit of a different situation here.
I'm going down with that ship. One league I have him, I think it's our producer writers league. I'm just going down with
I have him in a lot of spots. And look, the Eagles cornerbacks are not good players, so he can definitely get over there. The thing for the rest of the Giants offense is they've obviously struggled in pass protection. The Eagles have a pressure rate of 42.9% per Next Gen Stats, which is the second best in the NFL.
Oof.
So I think that's going to be trouble up front. Don't want to play Eli. I think Brandon Marshall's droppable. Sterling Shepard's droppable. All these guys you just don't want anything to do with. I mean, Shane Vereen is really the guy. Is it weird that Shane Vereen's like the player I'm most excited about in the Giants offense?
Not a good sign.
Like, he can easily catch 80 passes this year. Like, that's not a joke at all. I think if you're in a PPR league and you like need 6 points, like sure, throw Shane Vereen out there.
The Giants offense has scored 20 points or fewer in 8 straight games now.
Amazing.
They have 13 points to their name in 2017.
This is an
offense that's allergic to the end zone right now, and you don't want anything to do with it in fantasy unless it's Odell.
They're bad. They're a bad, bad team.
If you're desperate, you maybe stream Evan Ingram. He did see 7 targets. I don't love it.
He's in concussion protocol.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know. All right, never mind.
Keep an eye on that.
Don't do that. And on the Eagles side, Darren Sproles kind of the same thing as Shane Vereen, like PPR floor play only. And in the passing game, I think Zach Ertz is in a great spot. The Giants are just like I was talking about with the Jaguars and even the Broncos, is they have these great boundary perimeter corners. You want to go at them up the middle, and that's where Zach Ertz is obviously operating. Same with Nelson Aguilar as a slot player.
Man.
Yeah.
He's seeing a ton of volume. Two rumors in this game, by the way.
Rumors.
Orleans Darkwall rumored to get more carries and more touches. Paul Perkins possibly going to be hitting the bench. I don't know if that matters because they can't run block. Well, they can't block in general.
Yeah.
Philadelphia.
They can't do anything.
On Philadelphia's side, Corey Clement is rumored to be getting a little bit more work as well. Obviously, Wendell Smallwood has been anything but spectacular. LeGarrette Blount doesn't look like a good system fit. Corey Clement out of Wisconsin, I thought was a very good player in college.
He was okay. A lot of good running backs have come out of Wisconsin.
They have.
Clement was just kind of like, for me. And, like, he didn't profile very athletically at the combine.
No, he
had very pedestrian numbers. So I'll be curious to see if he does anything.
I don't even know
offense.
If he was drafted.
No,
I don't think he was.
Not.
I think
he was
an undrafted. Yeah. I think he's an undrafted. But, again, highly productive in college. I don't hate it.
They can't lean on Darren Sproles all year, you know?
No.
Yeah, they got to find some kind of solution.
It's craziness. Yeah, yeah. And again, for me, Wendell Smallwood is not the solution. If it ends up being Corey Clement who gets even 50% of that share, it's a name that you should at least – find on your waiver wire, flag it, and be like, "Hey, let me just keep an eye on Corey Clement."
No, it's a good deep guy to circle. I would sit Wentz. I don't really think we touched on that in this game.
Oh,
but
how dare you?
I know he's the QB3 right now, but the Giants' defense is still very, very good. Yeah. And in his 2 games against New York last year, Wentz completed just 56% of his passes against them for 500 yards and 1 touchdown and 3 picks.
Okay.
So if you have the Eagles' defense this week, though, going the opposite
Fire
way against Eli.
Up.
Oh, my.
I think both these I think this is going to be an ugly, low-scoring game.
Oh, yeah. So,
what did Norris Jenkins deal is?
I think he's coming back this
great
week.
Question.
And if he comes back, that's probably not great news for Alshon Jeffery.
Oh,
yeah.
No. R.I.P. Alshon, for sure. Seattle taking on the Titans in another bruiser of a game. This is starts off your afternoon tilt. DeMarco did not practice. He had a hamstring injury he's been dealing with a hamstring injury ever since preseason. Didn't practice Wednesday. Corey Davis has already been ruled out because of his hamstring injury. Alex Gelhar, what do you got?
This has got to be a low-scoring game, right? I've been trying to get a bead on this game all week, and it's tough. Like, I think we're at the point where you can't start Russell Wilson right now. We need to see this offense get right. The Titans have a pretty good defense. And it's just like Russell Wilson hasn't been able to get anything going in the passing game. I think Chris Carson is a fine start as long as there's no late breaking news heading into Sunday that Thomas Rawls is going to.
Well, Thomas Rawls started in week 2.
Right, I know. We need to, unless there's some big breaking news that, like, we're going to saddle Thomas Rawls with 20 carries, he's back. I think you can start Carson. You can start Baldwin as a floor play. We're not playing Jimmy Graham, as we already talked about. Not playing Paul Richardson. I don't love the Seahawks defense in this spot either. I mean, maybe
really?
Because. It's going to be a low-scoring game, but the Titans have one of the best offensive lines in
that's
football
true.
That
Actually,
protects
that's
that protects Marcus Mariota, and he doesn't turn the ball over that often.
Yeah, okay. You're
so
right.
So there's going to be limited – it's a limited ceiling play if you're rolling out their defense.
Maybe get 5 or 6 out of them or something.
Especially because they're going on the road too.
Good point.
On the flip side too, with the Titans, like, you can't play Mariota. He has struggled recently. Actually, he's thrown 1 touchdown or fewer in 5 straight games going back to last year. That includes the one where he broke his leg, but – he had that hot stretch during the middle of the season last year and
then
has gone quiet. Yeah. Like, really quiet. And with Corey Davis out, Eric Decker looking a little old and a little slow right now, like, his upside is just non-existent.
And that's the way they built their team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's to run the ball, play good defense.
Which, if there are
this is what they want
to do. If there's anybody to start, it's obviously Derrick Henry in this one. I don't think you can play Murray on a banged-up hamstring against the Seahawks. Plus, he's not practicing.
Yeah.
Delanie Walker, I mean, just because tight end is a wasteland.
It sounds like you don't want to play anyone in this game at all.
It's not a great game for fantasy, of course. This game will be 42 to 35.
Can we please have Derrick Henry break out for like three touchdowns? Carlos Hyde shredded Seattle last week on the ground.
I will say, with Corey Davis being out, if you're desperate for wide receiver play, you could maybe start Rishard Matthews, only because Mariota has eyes for him in tough situations. And I grabbed this from Next Gen Stats because I thought it was interesting. Where is that in my thing? Okay, so Matthews has caught three of four targets when he's had close coverage. That's within a defender within 1 yard of him. And that's nearly 30% of all of Matthews' targets, which is by far the most among the team.
Okay.
So, like, when Mariota is worried or under duress, he goes to Matthews a lot recently this year.
If he does that with Richard Sherman on him, see ya.
But if you watch their games, he's made some really impressive catches in tight coverage. It's a desperation flex for somebody out of this matchup.
Atta baby.
Just Taywan Taylor, sleeper?
Oh, I like it.
He got some work last week.
Yeah, he's a good player.
These other dudes injured?
He's a good player. I would like it more if they weren't going against the Seahawks, though.
Yeah.
But he profiles as the kind of receiver that actually burns the Seahawks as one of those shifty, quick, small guys.
I was trying to talk myself into it because when I was starting to look at this game for the matchups column, I was like, yeah, Taywan Taylor, but he hasn't gotten enough work yet.
Yeah.
Dude, deep post out of the slot, give it to me.
Not in this game.
Right. He only played like 11 snaps.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, they started to get him.
He played 11 snaps, but he was that productive?
He had like two.
He had
touches.
Two catches for 16 yards.
What was he?
I just feel like he made some kind of splash play.
He had a long run, I think, in that game. Yeah.
Oh, I was looking at his rushing. He had two rushes, actually. He had one catch for 42 yards.
He had a deep catch.
That's what it was. Yeah, he had a couple runs and one deep catch. But, like, he's another player to circle, but, like, it's got to be a wait and see approach with him for now.
All right, there you go. All right, where are we here?
KC Chargers.
Yeah.
Chargers. French.
All right, so I think you're starting Philip Rivers in this game. KC's pass defense hasn't been great. They rank 27th in the league right now.
Okay.
And Philip Rivers and Keenan Allen, Keenan Allen's back and he's helping.
Cooking.
Dude, yeah, helping Philip Rivers' production. Rivers this year, he's 261 pass yards per game. A 4-to-1 touchdown interception ratio.
Where is he on the QB ranking list? Because he's been doing pretty well.
Wait, who? P. Riv?
Rivers? Yeah.
I mean, despite the fact that he took on Denver, it's not bad.
True. Keenan Allen has 14 receptions this season, tied for third most among wide receivers. You're starting these guys. I think, Melvin Gordon's production last week was a little concerning. He didn't do much on the ground, but he's getting – I think he had seven catches on eight targets and like 65 yards receiving. So I think you can rely on that kind of floor from him, even if he's not getting it done on the ground. Yeah. Yeah. And he had the goal line touchdown. So you're starting Melvin Gordon.
For sure.
I think, and the Chiefs offense is just firing on all cylinders. You're starting Tyreek Hill. You're starting Travis Kelce. You're starting Kareem Hunt.
Yep.
And I believe the Chargers will be out without Jason Verrett again with a knee injury. So that opens some
things concerning.
Up. Yeah.
We go to producer
Chris deep sleeper in this game, I think, is producer Chris's guy, Travis Benjamin.
True.
Okay.
I think he could get over for a big play because if you just look at how the Chiefs deploy their cornerbacks, obviously they mostly just keep Marcus Peters at left corner there.
He's been struggling this season too.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a good
player though. But nevertheless, like, Keenan Allen plays 55% of his snaps in the slot, so he can definitely get over in the middle of the field where KC typically struggles at slot cornerback. But Travis Benjamin also 42% of his snaps from the slot, so he could rip, a couple of big plays there.
Okay.
On the inside.
Nice.
What is the latest on Jason Verrett, producer Chris?
We don't know. And it is a little concerning because this guy did not practice for a majority of training camp. It took him like 2 or 3 weeks to get in the mix. He's got a knee issue, and I don't know if it's the same knee that he hurt in week four last year.
Okay.
But it's just a wait-and-see situation, But you never like to see these guys out early because Monday night against the Broncos was the first time we saw Verrett, Hayward, Bosa, and Ingram on the field at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then, unfortunately, Verrett goes out in week two. So it looked like Trevor Williams – he filled in week two. He had five starts last year. So I don't know. It's interesting, but I will say this about Keenan Allen. Week one, the first half of that Chiefs game, he ate up Marcus Peters.
Oh, yeah.
It was like six catches for 63 yards.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, and then he got hurt in that second half. But, I mean, watch back that first half. It was unbelievable. So I like Keenan Allen a lot, and I like Hunter Henry, especially with, I think people aren't realizing the loss of Eric Berry. You know, they had a defensive struggle against the Eagles last week. So I think Hunter Henry potentially could get off. He had seven targets, seven catches for 80 yards last week.
There you go. Cincinnati taking on the Packers. Tyler Eifert did not practice Wednesday. He's got a knee issue in addition to having a back issue as well. He is looking at not
– I saw Schefter had tweeted while we were in the pod that he did not practice again today and is looking severely doubtful.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah. I mean, even if he goes, I'm not rolling him out there. Forget that.
Not great, Bob.
Matt Harmon, what do you got?
Fair enough. This is hopefully a get-right game for some of your Bengals. In a high-scoring game.
Is it, though?
Well, it better be.
to help that, the Packers just announced that Nick Perry, one of their top pass rushers, is having hand surgery this week.
Oh, no.
So he's out, and Mike Daniels is probably in doubt as well. So the Packers' defense.
Bro, if this is a game that turns into like one of those 14-13 games, I'm breaking my remote.
No, what I'm meaning is it might actually be higher scoring. Like the Bengals,
I hope so.
The Bengals might have chances to.
If this,
put
if
up
it's
some
like
points.
A 42-35 game, I'm all about it.
Right. Yeah, I mean this should profile as a high scoring game. Look, the Bengals right now, one of their imperatives apparently under Bill Lazor is to get the ball out quickly. Right now, Andy Dalton is 14th in fastest time to throw. So there's not too much room to go up there. They are getting the ball out pretty quick. The Bengals are 15th in pressure rate allowed, according to Next Gen Stats. So I really think like the answer is just Andy Dalton just needs to play better. Like, so I'm almost a little, it sounds weird, but I'm a little comforted by that fact that it's not like a broken offense, you know, or whatever.
It's broken because Andy Dalton looks like
right. But we've seen Andy Dalton play pretty well before under good conditions, and I think that the conditions are decently enough there for him to improve. Like I said, I think he just needs to get right. I mean, he ran into tough spots against Baltimore and against Houston. Those are not good defenses to kind of get
that's
going
true.
On, especially
happy feet.
Right, totally. So and that's who we know Andy Dalton is. I think the Packers could provide a softer landing spot. Everything is lining up for AJ Green. Like, if you have him, don't sell him. And if you can buy him, go do that before Sunday.
I like it.
And other than that, Joe Mixon is a guy that people are dropping right now, and I definitely want to pick him up if they're doing that.
I think he's a total buy low right now.
Great buy low, but don't want to play him in this. Don't want to play any of those Bengals backs.
No, we gotta see how the Ken Zampezi workload splits. The hope is that he starts feeding Mixon more because they drafted him high, and Jeremy Hill has been inefficient, to say the least, the last couple of years. But, yeah, I'm with you. I can't start the Bengals' backs just yet. But this could tell us a lot about how to value them going forward.
Interesting. All right. Sunday Night Football. Oakland taking on Washington. Rob Kelly back at practice in a limited capacity on Wednesday. If you were like me and jumped the gun and burned a high waiver priority on Samaje Perine, I'm sorry for
you.
You
would.
Jeez.
You just can't quit Samaje Perine, James.
I don't know what to do. I mean, it's like I drafted him, then I dropped him, then I spent a high waiver priority on him. I don't know what's going on.
He is your boogeyman this year. He's your fantasy boogeyman.
It's not good. It's not great. But Rob Kelly, it is a good sign for the Washington offense. Rob Kelly is back. Again, is dealing with a bruised rib. There was fears that it was going to be a cracked rib, which would have probably left him out, you know, anywhere between, you know, 4 to 5 weeks. So if you are a guy that has Rob Kelly, I don't necessarily know if he's playable this week because of the injury.
Nah.
But Alex Gelhar, what do you got?
I think this is a good game for the passing offenses. I actually think – I mean, obviously you're going to start Cooper, you're going to start Crabtree, but – this could be a game to go back to the well with Jared Cook. I know Franchise wrote him up as a streamer last week.
I think he had 25 yards.
Yeah, he was targeted six times, though. He was tied for the most on the team. Had four catches, 25 yards.
He averaged under 3 air yards per target, by the way. So he was getting the Jarvis Landry
treatment. Yeah, that's rough.
Just didn't get any downfield looks.
But Washington got ripped apart by Ertz, and then last week they gave up big plays to the Rams tight ends, too. So
Gerald Everett had almost 100 yards.
Yeah, this could be a spot to go back to Jared Cook there. I think both quarterbacks are good plays this week. I mean, I don't know what to do with the Washington pass catchers right now. If anybody else has any insight they'd like to share, that'd be great. But maybe this is a good spot for Terrell Pryor.
It feels like it is at home against Oakland. I mean, you figure the pass catchers there. I don't know.
It's just been tough to read because after Pryor got pummeled with volume in week one, he fell back to earth and only had like what, 4 targets last week.
Yeah. So. And most of it in the second half.
I think this is a good spot to start Cousins, though. I think this is one of those games where he's back at home. He'll probably put up close to 300 and a couple TDs at least.
I hope so.
Chris Thompson's a good play too this week with Rob Kelly nicked up.
Right.
They handed P. Ryan 21 carries last week, which was kind of crazy. But yeah. I would assume that Chris Thompson gets a few more touches, and he's just been so good with them thus far.
And it could be a higher scoring game, or at least, you know, a pressure to score more anyways, because Oakland's going to put up points regardless.
Yep.
And if that's the case, they're going to have Chris Thompson out there in a pass-catching role.
Yep.
And you're right. I could absolutely see him getting more volume. All right, Dallas at Arizona, Monday night football. John Brown likely out with a quad injury. Franch, what do you got?
Yeah, this is Zeke and Dak are both looking to bounce back here after a terrible game against Denver. Denver,
hey, real
really
quick, can we have a conversation about Zeke?
Sure.
Because I think we've all kind of sort of given him a pass because he's had really, really tough matchups.
Yeah.
You know, when you start against, you know, Snacks Harrison and the Giants defensive line, and then you got to go play Denver and their defensive. So you give Zeke a pass.
I think you give Zeke a pass.
But if he doesn't do something this week, are we starting to get a little bit more concerned?
A little bit.
I mean, he had a fine week one. 24 carries,
sure.
Over 100 yards, 4.3.
That's passing game,
that's,
too.
That's, yeah, he caught it. He caught all 5 of his targets, too.
And that's Dallas's game. When they're winning, like, that's how they win. They give Zeke the volume. Last week, they were blown out, and
yeah.
Denver forced Dak to beat them, and he couldn't.
I've actually been encouraged with his usage. I mean, outside of on the ground last week, which was obviously not what you'd expect, tough
right.
spot. But he's got 5 targets in both games, and that's important because yep. it was something that wasn't there in week one. Or, I mean, in his first season, excuse me. So, the thing with Zeke is just all the chatter that's gone on with his, and I don't know if that's what you're referring to, but like his effort or whatever.
The effort, the weight. You know, obviously he's got a lot of stuff going on off the field as well. It
yeah.
just I just bring it up because is it a situation?
Wasn't me this time.
Hey,
wasn't
me
this
it was
time.
Me. Yeah. It was a tweet. The volume got me. Autoplay.
It's a situation where I just look. There's a lot of negative reports going on surrounding Ezekiel Elliott. You know, and again, the weight concerns me a little bit. The effort level, obviously, as we saw. I don't know.
Yeah,
not that that's fantasy relevant necessarily, but if all of these things start compounding, it's a situation where you're carrying a lot of baggage on.
Yeah,
the
yeah. I mean, no, you say it's not fantasy relevant, but it kind of is in a way because like we forget all the time that these are human beings.
Exactly.
And, like this is a guy that look, whatever you feel about Ezekiel Elliott, I think is justified. If you feel some negative feels towards him. Totally justified, but this is a person that's going through a lot. I'm not giving him a pass. Like, oh, poor Zeke's going through a lot. Whatever, but like he's got a lot on his plate right now,
yes.
and like any human being, like if you were going through this, maybe you're dealing with it by eating a couple more burgers a night. You know, I don't
you
know.
What I mean?
Who knows?
Or it's just overall stress.
Yeah,
weight.
Just
I don't
stress
know.
Stress weight. I don't know,
I don't know.
But it's a lot to carry, and also try to play NFL football,
that's
which.
Right.
By the way,
that's
is
right.
hard.
That's
it's
right.
really a difficult thing to do.
That is exactly
so
right.
He's one of the riskiest players to be invested in right now in fantasy because of all this stuff that's going on behind
the price
the scenes,
you paid.
The price you paid. And, by the way, like we have no idea what's going to go on with this legal situation. Like
right.
It could be week 6 and all of a sudden Zeke's out for 6 games.
Right.
Like you have no idea when this is going to happen.
It's true.
We should get back into the rest of this matchup, though.
I will. I just wanted to bring that up.
No, it was a good discussion.
It's one of those things where, you know, I know a lot of people are starting to get a little bit worried about Zeke from a fantasy perspective. That's all.
All right, yeah. French, who else do we like in this matchup?
Dez had 16 targets last week.
Amazing.
And everyone was worried about him having these tough matchups against the top corners and stuff. Now I think he'll be up against Patrick Peterson, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
But I don't expect 16 targets unless Dallas gets down early, which against Arizona I don't think is going to happen. I think you roll Dez out there.
100%.
I think you're starting Zeke. The Cardinals have the 30th ranked rush defense through 2 games.
Do you believe in J.J. Nelson?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, why not?
I don't expect a huge game like he had last week, but John Brown is out. Larry Fitzgerald was shut down by the Cardinals, by the Colts. I mean,
by the Cardinals offense.
He's kind of getting shut down by the Cardinals.
By the Colts. I think Larry Fitzgerald bounces back a little bit here. But, yeah, I mean, J.J. Nelson, Carson Palmer had eyes for him. Seven targets, 120 yards, and a touchdown.
Deep sleeper in this game as well.
Dude can burn.
Jerron Brown is definitely worth a look.
Saw 11 targets too.
Yep. Yeah. Getting vertical looks too.
I like it.
So I think you're starting, you know, Dez, Zeke, Nelson. You can't. Until we see how the Cardinals' backfield plays out, like they said they might get Chris Johnson some more work.
Yeah.
I don't think you can start anyone there. Like, if he gets the volume in this game, then maybe going forward you can consider him like a flex play. But I want to see what happens there first.
By the way, tight end one, Jason Witten on the year right
now.
Probably worth a throw out there, too.
90 yards and a touchdown in both games.
Hey, I told you guys this. No, I didn't. Nobody said that.
Yeah, all right, let's close out your show with a round of Daily Daps.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hooks. Give me daps, because I be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up, daps abound, daps up.
All right, we go to the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gellhart. What do you got?
Two daps. One, started BoJack Horseman season 4 recently. I think we're, what, 4 episodes in, Harmon?
Yep.
Been really digging it. It's a fantastic show
on
Netflix. It's very funny at times, but also can get very dark and existential. And it's just
right up my freaking alley.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show. If you haven't watched it, check out the past seasons. They've got some great characters, really smart writing, and I've been digging this new season. And also, Daily Daps to the book I'm reading right now, Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. It's a guy who grew up in, like, the Appalachian area, you know, Kentucky and the edge of Ohio and stuff, and grew up essentially as a hillbilly. And he had, you know, met a lot of interesting people growing up and went into the military, now has a law degree from Yale, I believe. And it's just kind of telling the story of his childhood and growing up. And who these people are that so often get overlooked in American culture, and just where they live and how they operate and who they are. And it's been a very fascinating read so far. So
nice.
Highly recommended. Hillbilly Elegy is the
there
book.
There you go. Matt Harmon, what do you got?
Yeah, I just want to daily dap all the people that do all the great, like, behind the scenes work here at NFL Network, NFL.com, like the people that aren't, you know, us idiots out there with thousands of Twitter followers constantly, like, you know, patting you on the back and retweeting you, like, oh, this is great stuff. Like, we can't do our jobs without these people.
Sure.
And they so often just, you know, aren't considered and aren't thought about. But, you know, we're nothing without all the help of those people. So daily dap to, and there's tons of them, you know, in all kinds of different departments.
I want
you researchers.
To name all of them.
Okay, well, let me pull up the whole roster here.
Open up all those different listservs.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Just read off your email listservs. No, but I mean, yeah, all the people in social department, research, production,
you.
All those people that do the work that, like, basically elevates us to look to pretend to look as good as we
engineering
think.
Engineering and stuff. Yeah. The people that helped producer Chris set up this weird
Holy
rig we've got in the
Lord.
Conference room right now
yes,
to do all
absolutely.
This stuff.
Hey, yeah. I did this all myself today. Yeah, so
beautiful.
Nice.
Well, then daily daps to you, Chris.
Daily, yeah. I'll piggyback off of that. Daily daps to a producer, a colleague, Todd Mossberg, who helps you know, produce the NFL Fantasy Live show. He's going through some stuff right now. Mm-hmm. Daily daps to him. You know, and really – And I would say this regardless, because he actually believed in the product, right? So he believed in Konos as an actual television segment, and really worked hard to put that on television. It's a relatively complex.
Oh, I didn't even know you put that on TV. What episode was that on? Sunday?
Yeah, it's on Sunday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So they put it on Sunday, and yeah, Todd Mossberg believed in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a complicated segment. But he believed enough in me to simplify it, make it television friendly, and he did all of those things to kind of behind the scenes to kind of make that engine go, and I absolutely appreciate that. So, Todd Mossberg, thoughts, prayers out to you, my friend. I know he's going through some stuff right now, but yes, can't wait to get you back in the office and see you again, my friend. All right, Franchise, what do you got?
Yeah, I've been watching the show on A&E, the Murder of Lacey Peterson, like a documentary. I just finished it last night, and when this trial was going on, I think it was 2003 or 4, like, I was finishing up high school, and, you know, I saw it in the press, and the media, it was like a media storm, obviously.
Right.
But didn't really understand what was going on there, and this documentary, you know, Scott Peterson's in jail now on death row, and this documentary opens up some mishaps along the way that happened with the trial that helped to get him convicted. And I'm not saying I'm on one side or the other, but it was kind of eye-opening, and I think this is going to come up again soon here in the state of California Supreme Court. He might get a retrial or something. So
interesting.
Cool to like get all this info and the oversights and the jury selection and all these other factors that went into having him convicted.
Interesting.
And, you know, there was never any real solid evidence that he did it, and he still got convicted and sentenced to death. So it was just cool and insightful to watch. It's something that went on while I was alive, but I wasn't really paying attention
right.
to it.
Exactly.
It's the same kind of thing with, like, Making a Murderer on Netflix.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Especially because that was in my state, but I was so young when it happened. Like,
right.
my parents would be watching it on the news. I'm like, I don't care about this. I'm
exactly.
going to go play
exactly.
video games or something. Like, you know, I was too young to care, but it was
right.
just – And those kind of, like, in-depth looks at the legal process and stuff for such high-profile cases are – because, like, you get a good coverage on the news, but, you know, in their 2 to 3 minute segment on it, they can't go as deep as an hour-long show. So those things are always
yeah.
fascinating
to, like,
watch.
It was, like, 4 or 5 episodes.
And
so
much of the documentation isn't even available, like, at that time.
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
It's available after.
Exactly.
Right. You know what I mean? So it's interesting.
Breaking
Chris,
news, NFL.com's Matt Franciscovich takes stand on murder trial.
I said I didn't have one side or the other.
Please reach out to him at this number for comment.
I think the documentary, like, the show stance was this guy deserves a second chance.
And Matt
that was the angle the show
also makes his stance.
That was the angle the show took. I'm not taking a stance. I just found it interesting to watch.
Producer Chris, what do you got? Take
oh,
us
my
home,
goodness.
Pal.
All right. James Coe gets my dab today. He was a guest on Chargers Weekly. Dropped some fantasy knowledge.
Nice.
It was great. We got Kevin Harlan and James Coe
nice.
This week. Which,
wow.
What more can you ask for, right?
So, yeah. Well, it's like the same thing when I was on it and Chris tweeted out, like, we've got Greg Gumbel and Matt Harmon.
No, but you guys have been awesome. Franchise came on.
Does not
Harmon
here.
Came on. Coe came on. We got to get
I'll
Alex
on. Soon,
yep. We got to go through your agent, I guess, right?
Kevin Harlan.
No, yeah, my people.
That's great. All right, what a big time show we had here. A lot of fun as always. Producer Chris, Alex Gilhar, Matt Harmon, and Matt Franciscovich. I am James Coe. We'll see you Monday.